Welcome to this workshop. It's good to be here with you. I feel as though I've gotten a lot more today already than I can give back to you, but the committee who planned this meeting asked me to speak about the process of writing and developing a textbook for classroom use. So some of the things we will explore are listed on your handout. The three questions on there. What happens behind the scenes when a new textbook is being planned? How is the project organized? And what work is required to write and develop a new course? And as the title suggests, we could compare writing school curriculum with a lengthy journey. So in the next 45 minutes, we'll try to compress a number of years' work into a 45-minute speech. The handout that you have covers has the outline of the main points that I plan to cover. And some of you may not know who I am. My wife, Annetta, is here in the audience. I'm Henry Weaver. And we live east of Mount Forest, and I'm currently teaching at a parochial school, Marigold Hollow Parochial School. And I'm also currently serving on the book committee for our schools, the Waterloo, Wellington, Perth Parochial Schools. And our responsibility is to provide curriculum for our schools. We have roughly 75 schools, and our responsibility is to make sure that we have curriculum for all the schools. And generally, the curriculum is common in all of the schools. So at the present, we're working on a number of book projects. And in the past, I have been quite involved with writing a post grade 8 math book, Mathematics Plus, and we'll get to that later on. I want to share from my own experience, but some of you might also have things that you can share as well. Throughout this topic, then you're welcome to ask questions. And if we have time at the end, then we might have an open discussion period yet. Most of you are unknown to me. Have any of you ever been involved with book writing or field testing a new curriculum? If you have been, then you may raise your hands just so I have a bit of an idea who I'm talking to. So we've got a few. Well, thank you. So what do we see when we pick up a new textbook? It will depend largely on what our connection is with school. A teacher sees the opportunity to teach more effectively. A student sees an opportunity to use a brand new book. I still remember when I went to school and new books were always fascinating to me. And the board members and the school administrators will, besides that, also see the price tag. How many of us consider the amount of work that is required to produce a new textbook? Well, let's think about a gardener. A gardener will appreciate the amount of work that is needed to have a productive weed-free garden, just simply because she has planted, hoed, and watered. And a contractor has an appreciation for the amount of work that was required to construct this building. And again, just simply because he has helped to plan and construct a building. And likewise, writers have an appreciation for the amount of work in a textbook. A little bit on history. And I just at random picked out a few major projects of the past just to see what amount of work has been done in the past. So back to King James I of England. In 1604, plans are made to produce a new English translation of the Bible. A large group of men is divided into six committees to work on this project. And each committee then reviews the other committee's work. And 7 years later, the first edition of the King James Version of the Bible is published, which is the 1611 version that we still use, with a few changes. 1745. We're now in America. The Mennonites are there, and war is brewing. The German-speaking Mennonites wish to see the Martyrs' Mirror translated from Dutch into German. This project only took 3 years, but 15 men worked on the translation and fairly steadily and produced the largest book in America before the Revolutionary War. Now, up to 1828, Noah Webster's first English dictionary is published after more than 25 years of work. Obviously, producing books requires a lot of vision and dedication. Now, coming up to September 1966, and I really appreciated the history of the Christian Day Schools and just a little bit of history on the parochial schools. 9 parochial schools begin conducting classes, and one of the goals is to have a church-operated school where parents have the responsibility to educate their children instead of the government. At the time, one of the Ministry of Education's biggest concerns was that the parochial schools would be taught by teachers who had little more than a grade 8 education. There were numerous meetings to address that concern until it was satisfactory. Quite likely, the government would have expressed serious concerns about using textbooks which were written and published by people who had no college or university education. 2018. Today, we are thankful for the many resources available which have been published by the Plain People for use in Christian schools. Many people have put in much time, effort, and financial support to make these books possible. We have a government which is tolerant and permits us to operate our schools as an extension of our Christian homes. Indeed, we have much to be thankful for. So the title, again, of this topic is The Journey of a Textbook. We will look at only some parts of the journey and not necessarily of one textbook in particular because of the involvement in different projects, and then different things apply to different types of books. The first thing is, what is the beginning of a new book? Well, that varies. Of course, ideas are one of the first things. Needs generally dictate the beginning. And what might be some needs? The course might not be available elsewhere, and that was the case with Mathematics Plus. We felt we wanted something that is more than grade 8, but we weren't able to find something that we were totally satisfied with. So we decided to go ahead and write our own course. Another need is old public school texts become scarce or worn out. Our school started by using some old public school textbooks. So in the course of time, then needs were dictated that way. Or sometimes a text becomes outdated, such as geography books. And that's another project that we're working on right now, is a US geography. So once a need has been identified, then we have an approval process that we go through. Before we start the project, obviously it's going to need financial support, and also people are going to be needed to work on the project. One of the first things that has to be done is to establish a goal or an objective. And that is needed to guide the project as it moves forward. When we start on a journey, we have the best result if we know what our destination is. On the journey of writing a textbook, we may meet up with obstacles, we may meet delays, we may even make detours. But if we keep our goal in focus, the journey can still be successful. Planning is a very important part of a new textbook. But almost all major book projects that I know of have been organized somewhat on an evolving basis as various aspects of the project unfold. It's a little like a journey. We know what our goal is, but we don't know what we're going to meet underway. And same with textbook writing. But we should still have a plan at the beginning. One of the first things to establish that plan is a survey. Like I said, I'm serving on the book committee. The book committee is responsible to conduct a survey, if that's what we decide to do. And we give it to teachers, former teachers, board members, or other interested people. And the survey will outline the proposed project. It includes questions that are specific to the direction that the project should or should not take. It also includes questions that relate to the content or the teaching methods or the layout. And then once those surveys are back, they are summarized. And the feedback helps the book committee to gain an understanding of what would be useful and what direction to take. Organizing a committee. So the book committee is responsible for the curriculum, but for each project, then we try to organize a committee specific to that project. And generally, one or two of that committee is from the book committee with other people outside of the book committee to work on that project. And these people can help to give direction to the writer and to the project in general. And this subcommittee should have a chairman or a project coordinator who leads out and keeps it organized. And this person is usually someone from the book committee, and it could even be the writer. It will depend on who the writer is. And this the chairman or the project coordinator helps to keep others informed of the progress. And as the manuscript is written, he sends it out to the other people on the committee to review and compiles the reviewer's feedback and assists the writer with editing changes and just gives general assistance to bring together the details in the layout. And if there's a meeting for the project, the project coordinator will represent the project at that meeting. So on the topic of committees, sometimes when we're working on a project, then we are tempted to think sometimes that a committee lengthens a project because more people are involved. And this is very true in one sense. However, a group of people helps to provide stability. It reduces the potential of one person's opinions influencing a project to the point that it begins to stray from the original goal or purpose. As it says in Proverbs 24, verse 6, in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. And to make a project successful, the committee must be able to work together. And I have a little analogy that I heard recently, and I adapted it for this here. We can picture a single tree out in a fence row, and it has withstood the rigors of life and the storms, and guess what the wood is like? It's very tough, gnarled. It has strength. It has learned to stand alone, and the wind does not harm it. And that's not all bad. But if a sawyer is out there and he's looking for trees with a straight grain, that is one that he will pass over. Where are the trees with the straight grain? They are in the woodlot, where they're all competing to grow toward the sunlight, and they will grow taller and straighter. And they contain thousands of valuable board feet of lumber. Now, on their own, these trees would not be able to stand the wind, but they can stand together, and together they can withstand, and together they grow up. And together they have nice, straight lumber. So like the trees who stand together, a well-functioning committee can draw on the strengths of each other to successfully bring a project to completion. When we work on a committee, we will get to know each other in ways we haven't before. We will discover strengths in others we hadn't noticed. But on the other hand, we will also have opportunity to observe weak points in others we hadn't noticed before. Working with fellow committee members is an opportunity for people to pull together, utilizing the strengths that God has given. If we are tempted to see more of our fellow man's faults than his strengths, we do well to remember that we also have weaknesses for which we desire forbearance. So again, a key element of a successful committee, a successful project, is good communication. I came across a saying, it's more on the negative side, but I think it's very true. Assumptions are the termites of relationships. Assumptions are the termites of relationships. A little story that also illustrates communication. It's a very secular setting, and yet the point is clear. It was in an old family life from many years ago. How the Japs can do it. The Motorola company was losing money on its Illinois factory where television sets were being made. Production was lagging, and 60% of the sets turned out were rejects because of poor workmanship. So the factory was sold to a Japanese firm. 2 years later, with practically the same American workforce, the factory was turning out twice as many sets per day, and only 1% were rejects. The difference was credited to improved relationship between management and the workers. So, notice it said the same people. I think that's possible in committees as well. Writing an outline. Perhaps the book committee will be able to solicit help from people who have given considerable helpful advice on the surveys. The survey could also be used to help identify people who are willing or able to provide more help with the project. When we start a project, then obviously we're going to need people. And people who have good ideas are usually good people to ask for more ideas and more help. The writer of the project should be on board during the planning stage of a textbook. At a meeting with the committee, with experienced teachers and the writer, the survey results can be reviewed. Then with input from the committee and the writer, ideas can be organized for the content of the new textbook. After the meeting, the writer writes a table of contents for approval by the committee before starting the writing process. At the beginning of the Mathematics Plus project, then I was not on the book committee at that time. And there was another meeting where some people were present that were in the beginning stages of this project. And there was a bit, the meeting was not about Mathematics Plus, but there was a little bit of discussion about it. And I started asking questions. And before I knew what had happened, then I had committed myself to attending the next meeting. And when I came home, I told my wife about it. And before I knew what was happening, then I did not disagree with the proposal that I could help to write that book. So sometimes there are people who see potential in others that the person didn't really think is capable of doing. And that's how I felt at the beginning. Somebody else must have thought that if I show interest, then maybe it should be pursued. And now in looking back, I can see the same for other projects, that the people who show interest, those are the people that you need to ask for more ideas and help. So some things about the writer. If you're involved with the writing process, then it's very good if we are willing to let our work go through the review process. Inevitably, there will be editing changes. There will be other opinions expressed. So the writer's part is a lot easier if he is willing to accept constructive criticism. And then once the table of contents has received approval, then the writer will want to start by writing the first chapter and possibly The committee will want to see that first chapter before much more is done, just to see if the writer is on the right track. And that gives the committee confidence, and it gives the writer confidence. The writer will want to have a general direction of where to take it, but also, as a committee, then we want to give them a fairly broad range of latitude within the general direction, because what the writer writes will largely depend also on the source materials that he's researching. For example, the geography book that we're working on, our writer had to depend on source materials. So we didn't tell him, okay, this and this and this, we want to make sure that is included. We gave him a fair bit of latitude there. While the writer is writing, he might want to decide what pictures are included to complement the text. And if he does that, then make notations of the sources so that once you're in the layout stage of it, that you still know where those pictures are. And as the manuscript is written, it's a good idea if the committee can review it on a chapter-by-chapter basis. That way, you stay current with the work, you stay current with the editing, and you don't have to do a lot of catch-up at the end. So as you're editing, and as you're cutting and trimming and suggesting, we also do well to remember to encourage the writer to continue. Writing the manuscript is the number one step. Even in a book that you know will need a lot of pictures yet, the manuscript is the main part. The pictures and the layout and things like that come later. And talking about editing changes again, the writer is generally responsible to incorporate those changes just to maintain the writing style throughout the whole book. We also have a review process, and it's not always the same. It depends on the project. The committee is responsible to review the project or the manuscript. And the first time around, they'll check for content, obvious errors, or misrepresented information, just things that really stand out. And the grammar editing comes later, once those obvious things have been fixed. And for that, perhaps only a few people would be responsible for that. In the past, then, we have tried group editing, where a group of people sits down with the manuscript and try to edit it. And anyone that has been involved with that knows that there are some serious productivity issues with that. Number one, who is going to lead out? Is the writer going to? Or will someone else? The writer doesn't want to take the initiative on changes because he wants to be open to changes. So what seems to work better is we make copies and send it out to two or three people at the same time, and they all go through it with their red pen, and it comes back. And then the writer can combine those editing changes and still decide whether it's necessary or what he thinks. And he also has his committee to ask for opinions on what should or should not happen. Now, we come to the layout. At this point, then the manuscript is written, it's edited. Hopefully not too many more changes will be needed in the actual manuscript. At this point, then it could be field tested with a text-only version. It depends on what project it is again. Or you could take it on and do the layout and find the pictures and make sure that you don't require any major text changes at this point, because it's going to seriously affect your layout. What we have done is hire a graphic designer that if the project involves pictures or diagrams. We have been using Innovative for a number of projects. Arlen Weaver has done quite a bit of work for us already. Someone else could be assigned to select the pictures, make the maps, make the diagrams, That is time-consuming to add those details. It takes almost as much time as writing the manuscript. And then there's a number of details that you'll want to decide at some point. The physical size of the book. What cover will it have? Is it going to be hard or soft? What binding will it have? There's a kind of binding, it's called the perfect binding, but it is fairly imperfect for school use. It's the binding where it's just glued together at the back, and you open the book, then it falls apart after you've used it for a while. So textbooks quite often get the Smythe sewn binding, which is the threads that are in some books. Answer keys or teacher's guides could be spiral bound. And also decide on the paper weight and the paper quality. And take a look at your second page on the handout. That is an example of Mathematics Plus. The physical size is twice as big, but I wanted to get two pages on one sheet. So when we do layout, there's a number of details that we don't even think about when we pick up a book. I won't go through them in the order of importance, just as they come to me. At the top of the page, you see the headers. Well, you need to decide how you're going to do that. The one side says rates, ratios, percents. That's the title of that chapter. So every page would get that header. And the other side has the exercise number. So as you go through the book, you can see what chapter you're in. There's different ways you can do that, but it has to be decided. About halfway down on this side, there's a gray bar. We decided to use gray bars to divide the different lessons. And 6.5 indicates that it's chapter 6, lesson 5. So those are things that had to be decided. The numbering scheme at the bottom, we've got number 1, and then we've got A, B, C, D, E, F. We decided to go across with our letters, and that has to be consistent throughout the whole book. So at some point, somebody will have to go through and make sure all of that is consistent. And the best way to do that is to have a list of different things you want to check. Okay, you're going to check all the headers, make sure those are all right, flip through the book. You're going to check all of the numbering, flip through the book. It does not work to go through the book and try to check all of the things at the same time. You're going to miss some things. Another thing that we have in this book is the gray shading is always used in the explaining part or the example exercises. And there's more details. Oh, and number 9 on this side, you see the short forms RPM and HP. RPM is for rounds per minute and HP for horsepower. Well, according to the dictionary, RPM does not require periods and HP does. So those are details that you have to decide how are you going to do it and try to be consistent. Depending on what book you have, you will want to write an index for it. And that is also time-consuming, but some books won't need that. And in the layout stage, you're also going to need to prepare the copyright page and the title page, which is one of the first pages in the book. Write a preface and write the acknowledgments. The book committee might be responsible for that instead of the writer. And the table of contents with the page numbers once everything else is done. And then, again, once you're finished, check over all of the details. One thing we didn't talk about yet is the answer key. And you need to write that along with the textbook. Because as you're writing exercises, you're going to be able to remember better what you wanted in the answer key as you're going. And then it also needs to go through the same review process as the chapters. So if it's a book that you're writing an answer key for at the same time, then submit the chapter and the answer key for review at the same time. And the reviewers will actually need to physically work the problems if it's a math book to make sure that there are no errors. And inevitably there will be. And it's very time consuming to write an answer key. You might think, that doesn't take long. It's just a thin book. But it takes almost as much time to write as the text. And detail is especially important. And then also writing tests and a scoring guide for the tests. Something that when we order school curriculum, you just order it, it comes. but it needs to be written. Next one on the list here is field testing. And that is one of the most important parts of a new book project. The field tester's input is very valuable. What would be your thoughts on the reason for the importance of this part of the project? Alvin? Good point.
Isn't it also the sense that the customer is always right?
True.
Teachers have to be comfortable with using it.
That's right. There's lots of reasons to do the field testing. And that is also time consuming. Sometimes that takes more time than the writing. Often it takes more time than the writing. Because you field test it 1 year, and then you incorporate the changes. And then you field test it again, and depending how many major changes are done then, it might lengthen it out by 3 or 4 years. And like I said, the field tester's input is extremely valuable. And I just reminded of a comment that somebody made, and his comment was that good critics are hard to find. When we have a writer's book, then we like to make the writer feel good and say, oh, you've got a good book. But to make the book better, we must be honest and be helpful with constructive criticism. So when you're field testing, we try to field test in an experienced teacher's classroom and also in inexperienced teachers' classrooms. And the reason for that is because a lot of teachers will be inexperienced as time goes on. They will also be able to cope well with the new book. And ideally, some from the committee are also able to field test the textbook. That way they can deal constructively with the comments that come back. And when you ask field testers for their input, well, if you get a book and you're supposed to field test it, well, what are you supposed to give to the people who are making it? It works a lot better if you have a list of things that you want the field testers to watch for. Some questions that are specific to the course, such as, is it understandable for the students or does it flow smoothly? And also some of the things that you had suggested. Some of the field testers, they might come back and say, it's a great book. And then others might say, this book needs improvement. That's when the writer needs his committee to help decide what changes are needed. A new textbook should be field tested for a minimum of 2 years, and more often it's more. But on the other hand, editing can keep on perpetually. It can just keep on and keep on. So at some point, decide that enough is enough. Publishing. If you're involved with something, with a book project, then I think it's safe to say that don't expect this part to happen until at least 5 years have gone by, and likely more. I think Rod and staff has made the comment already that new textbooks take an average of 10 years to get onto the market. Maybe that was Kristen Light, I'm not sure anymore. One of those. Make sure that all changes have been made before publishing, because we don't want to have several editions of the final textbook due to corrections that could have been made in the field testing stage. But once field testing has sufficiently proven the new textbook, then it is ready for publishing. So you want to establish a print quantity And we have quite a number of schools and students, so that automatically takes care of quite a few books. But depending on the project, then we might check with other schools or school systems for potential interest, and that will also help us to decide how many to get printed. And at the printing stage, then we apply for an ISBN number and put it on the front of the copyright page. Then the more of the business part of it, we need to contact printers for pricing. And once we've priced, once we've made the selection, and then we send the file to the printer, and sometimes they might still have issues with the file and just the way it's set up, and that needs to be fixed out before they can go ahead with the printing. And we have learned that it is very important to ask for a proof copy. And what that means is ask the printer to make one copy of the textbook the way it's supposed to look. And the reason for that is because, surprisingly enough, if you think you've got it all right, there can still be errors. And one time we had ordered some answer keys for field testing, but we had ordered them in the final format so that teachers can see how they look and use them in that way. And we didn't bother asking for a proof copy because we thought that, there's not a lot of books. So we distributed those to the field testers, and then about halfway through the term, then I got a call from a teacher, and she said, "Well, where's the answer key for chapter 9? And I said, "Oh, I thought it's in there. We wrote a chapter 9 answer key." So I went to my copy, and sure enough, I couldn't find it. Well, what happened to it? I looked through the rest of the answer key, and then it was farther on in the book. And I don't know how that happened. We had received an electronic copy and had printed it off, and it was in the right order. And somewhere from the designer to the printer, things got changed. And there's other things that have happened already. Covers upside down, or simple things that make a big difference. So a proof copy is very important. So that way you can fix things before you have several thousand. So the proof copy, you'll want to look at those details again, the ones that I was pointing out on your handouts, especially the page numbering and the headers and the footers. Page numbers are a good indicator whether there's major issues. If you see they're all there, then generally there's no problems. And it's a good idea if the person who does this is the person who was responsible to get those changes edited. But it's also important to have someone else doing it that has not seen the book yet. And the reason for that is because the person who has not seen the book will be able to spot some obvious things a lot more readily than the person who's seen it quite a few times already. And then if the proof is okay, then you go ahead with the printing and take delivery of the books. And then finally, a new textbook in your hands. It's only a book, but what a satisfaction. And hopefully it can be useful for the students that plan to use it. Marketing is also a part of book publishing. Primarily, our mandate is to provide curriculum for our schools, but certain titles, then we also market to others. We need to determine a price and decide how and where to advertise. And now it's up to the board members and the teachers to decide whether they wish to buy this new curriculum. So, like I said, I was involved with Mathematics Plus. We've got some geography books, grammar books, history books on the go. I brought a copy of this here book. If anyone's interested in looking at it, you're welcome to look at it. Some of you may have already. There's two books in the course. This is the textbook. This is the answer key. Student tests are also in this book, and the test answers and the scoring guide are in this book as well. And the answer key also contains some notes to calculate, to assist with calculating the story problems that are in the textbook. The project, this here project, was started December of 2010. And the last printing was done in the summer of 2017. And if you're interested in the pricing, the textbook is $55 and the answer key $35. So then we come to the classroom use. It's in the hands of the teachers and the students. But it's finished now, but book publishers still enjoy hearing from their customers. Report errors if you find any. And if you have any good constructive criticism that will help to improve future editions, we will make note of that and try to consider it if we consider it important enough. And book publishers also enjoy hearing from people who are finding their textbooks useful. But generally, if we don't hear anything, we consider that people are satisfied. So, do you have any questions or comments on anything that I covered?
I was wondering whether you have any suggestions as far as getting copyrights for pictures and so on, things that you have found useful?
In terms of how to notate that?
Or where do you generally go for them?
Right now, in our geography project, we have Donald Martin is looking for pictures. He's from Clifford and he offered to help us with that. And so he tries to source pictures that are on the open, non-restricted market. But even then, he notates all the sources because we must be able to credit the picture. And so the way we've decided to do it, there's a lot of ways you can do it, but we've decided to do it, I think it's the way that Kristen Light does it as well, is to, in the back of the book, make notation of all the copyright credits. I think Donald had talked with a copyright lawyer on some of the options, and the options are rather endless, and you have to decide on a way that you're going to do it. But the main thing is to make notation and to credit the source. And sometimes we can't find pictures on the open market, and so we'll have to end up buying it from other sources. And Donald would be more familiar with the sources that he gets those from. Any other comments or questions?
Your math textbook there probably is not our business, and just say so, but I'm just wondering how many are you publishing?
Not of this book. No, we, I think it was 500 that we published. And I didn't check recently to see how many of them are gone. Now, when I mentioned several thousand, that would be some of the other books that we would be replacing curriculum, such as the readers would be one of the things that we had done. And that was before I was involved with the book committee.
Well, the first few years in our system, the readers were the part, right?
Yes.
Did you end up getting the copyrights to those books, or did you just, how was that done?
That was a very involved process. The books aren't copyrighted. Each work in the book is copyrighted. So what was actually done is Levi Bowman, who died last summer, he got some books with lists of authors in them, and he contacted the authors or their surviving families to ask for permission for poems and stories that we planned to reuse. And I think there was a set budget. We're not going over, I think it was $200 per story for copyrights. So each separate story had to be traced back. And then some stories we didn't reprint because of content issues and replace them with others. But that project has been completed for a few years now, from grades 1 to 8. Is there anything else? So in conclusion, writing new textbooks takes considerable time, effort, and dedication, but it is a rewarding work. Writers, reviewers, field testers, and teachers all are needed. Let us be thankful for the privilege God has granted to operate Christian schools and for the privilege we have to provide sound material for our children's education. So that brings us to the end, and may God bless you.